My name is Ellen Gamrath. The title of this session is The Day I Went to Church Naked, and a subtitle of The Geography of Illness and Healing. I was diagnosed with cancer in 1993, and I'm now in remission. I go in every 3 months for a complete checkup, and there's no sign of cancer in my body at this time. I'm a very private person. Whoops.
Well,
I have to start over again.
Sorry. I think so. Yeah.
Your voice is kind of...
Got one of the kids.
They hate to stop. I'm a very private person, and although I've shared much on a one-to-one basis and in my writing and journaling, it was in reading the quote that you have on this pink card that I passed around by Henry Nouwen that led me to do this session. I can't stop. Could I have a volunteer to read it?
I'll read it for you. Rembrandt painted his 63 self-portraits as a search for the spiritual through the channel of his innermost personality. Rembrandt realized that what is most personal is most universal. We are able to care deeply only if we are willing to paint and repaint our self-portrait, not as a morbid preoccupation, but as a search for light to share with others in the midst of darkness. To care, one must offer one's own vulnerable self to others as a source of healing.
Thank you, Barbara. I invite you to join me in my journey through cancer treatment. As we travel together, I will share journal entries, stories, and changes that have occurred in my relationships. And I put sort of a map. You can tell I'm not much of an artist. And this is sort of the path we will follow. And I will point to them as I go through the outline. Beginning, the journal entry for February 2nd, 1993, diagnosis. Jim and I had just returned from a week in New Mexico, a wonderful week of skiing at 12,000 feet and scrambling around cliff dwellings. Yesterday, I had an appointment with a surgeon for a second opinion on some changes I noticed in my breast in the last year. Even though repeated mammograms were negative, I was concerned. Today, a biopsy was done. The doctor showed me the tissue he had removed and said the words that I burned indelibly into my brain. You have cancer. It is dispersed through one-third of your breast, but not the kind you can feel as a lump, only a general thickening. Jim came into the operating room, and I told him what the biopsy had shown. We cried together, then Jim held my hand and said, "We're in this together, we'll see it through together, with God's help." With the surgeon's words, I stepped through a threshold. A door shut behind me. It was a transition in a handful of days from a high mountaintop experience to a deep and frightening valley. I want this to be a dream from which I will awaken, but that's not possible. It's not a mistake. With the doctor's three words, "You have cancer," my life changed. There's no turning back. Now I'll speak some to this, but you'll notice as I go along that there is a mix through all of it. In what happened to all of my relationship, my way of viewing life. Initially, I felt exposed, powerless, alone, frightened, vulnerable. And the most overwhelming factor in the diagnosis of cancer was that death became an immediate reality. Who was I? Many of my own ideas of who I was were wiped out. My value as a person. What made me worthwhile? I had to begin again, as Nouwen said in that quote that Barbara read, repainting myself. And that's when I wrote this story. The day I went to church naked. Have you ever had a nightmare of being in a public place and suddenly looking down and realizing you were completely naked? These nightmares turned into reality to me in a recent experience. During chemotherapy, I had lost all of my hair. I wore scarves or a wig whenever I went out. One morning, as I was getting ready to church, I looked in the mirror, really looked at myself. Bald is what I was. Why was I putting on a disguise? Was I wearing a wig, trying to make things look okay? They weren't. I decided not to put on the wig. Jim, my husband's loving comment was, "You look just fine to me." When we got to church, I felt it was a big mistake. I felt totally naked, even though only my head was exposed. Perhaps no one would notice. I scrunched down in the pew, but in the circular setting, seating of our church sanctuary, person after person looked at me and then looked quickly away. I felt like bolting out of there. The sermon seemed endless, but finally it came time for the passing of the peace. Suddenly, I was enfolded in hugs as woman after woman came up to me. "Good for you. You look great." Then time for communion. As we were headed back to our seat, the congregation sang, "Just as I am." What special meaning those words had for me. I had been blessed and strengthened within my church community, just as I was, as we all are, naked before and loved by God. With any life-threatening crisis, death impacts everything. I felt devastated, alone, angry. But quickly and of necessity, we moved into planning. There were people to call. What a blessing to have a community that wanted to be informed when things don't go right. And Jim, as a recently retired physician, helped make medical choices and was my hour-by-hour support and comfort. I felt confronted with a choice between life and death. Not that any of us can prevent death, but we can choose life every day. I was reminded of the Deuteronomy passage, "Today I set before you life and death, therefore choose life." It was a daily choice. One of the things that helped me almost immediately to move into choosing life was that our daughter Barbara was 7 months pregnant and due to deliver on my birthday, March 30th. So that was life in the midst of all the things that were saying death. The vulnerability that I felt was played out in a conversation I had in February with one of our other granddaughters, Claire, who's up here. Journal entry 219. Claire, our 3-year-old granddaughter, visited us today. When it came time to leave, she refused to go until she had completely undressed 3 Raggedy Ann dolls. She told me they need to be naked. I asked why and told her they'd get cold sitting there so exposed. Claire's reason for not wanting them dressed soon became clear. She wanted them naked because she wanted everyone to see the red heart and the "I love you" sewn on their chest. I am feeling exposed with my emotions close to the surface. We all wear armor of sorts. We all cover up our feelings behind clothes. Can I be open and risk being vulnerable? Now in the outline, we'll move to chemotherapy. Journal entry 29. Chemotherapy begins today, and surgery will be scheduled when the tumor shrinks to an operable size. With meditation and imaging, I wait for the surgery. I'm holding fast to the hands of family and friends and anchor myself in Romans 8:39. Nothing can separate us from the love of God in Christ Jesus. Jim and I had registered to come up to Holden for a retreat which was being led by Ray McKeever and John Schramm, and with the doctor's approval, we went. A conscious act of choosing life again and going to a place that had been a nurturing, gospel-centered community for our whole family. Relationship to nature. All during my illness, I was more tuned into nature. It was a source of healing and comfort for me. Almost every evening, Jim would drive me up to a high point where we could look out at the Olympic Mountains and watch the sunsets. It was a ritual of ending and then knowing there would be a beginning the next day. Since I couldn't tolerate the sun, going in the evening as the sun was setting was very appropriate. Also, I loved to be out in the sun, but with the chemotherapy, I couldn't be. So one night I woke up about 3 o'clock and the shades were up and the room was as bright as day. There was a full moon. So I just laid there for about an hour and moonbathed instead of sunbathed. And it seemed to me that the moon, the full moon, was God's fingerprint in the western sky. I also became very aware of the preciousness of life, and I wouldn't kill a spider or a mosquito. You know, I'd trap them or call to Jim and have him take them out. Well, that all sounds very idealistic. Last week, a spider bit my arm, my mastectomy side, and it swelled up like about that. My glands got sore, and I developed an infection and had to go on antibiotics. So I got very angry at spiders, and I think my nonviolence toward them at least was temporarily suspended. The reality and immediacy of death continues as a thread throughout my treatment. It has confronted me over and over again on many levels. I'd like to read a journal entry for March 21st. I'm often too weary to journal. This is a period of many dreams. In one dream, I am on a steep cliff, hanging over the edge, when suddenly a dark and ominous figure appears. I identify it as death, but am not frightened. On waking, I feel I have faced death and faced it emotionally as well as factually. I'm in control again, getting on top of things. Not quite. The next morning, Jim brought a tent caterpillar nest in to show me. One of the worms fell on the rug. I started to scream and cry. And the children's rhyme, the worms crawl in, the worms crawl out, the worms crawl in the dead man's mouth, circled round and round in my head, shattered my complacency completely. Another journal entry from mid-chemo. My hair was coming out in clumps, as you heard from that first story about church. Journal entry, February 23rd. My hair is coming out in large clumps, a frightening reminder of what is going on inside my body. Linda, our daughter, suggests saving my hair and putting it out this spring for the birds to use in building their nests. Today, our three grandchildren joyously put my hair under our backyard bushes. I felt God smile. Now we move on to surgery. Journal entry. Last night I had a vivid dream. In the Native American tradition, it might have been called a vision. I was standing in the lee of a windmill in Holland near the ocean. There, an intense storm was raging with threatening dark clouds and flashes of lightning. A huge tidal wave is coming toward me as I look out toward the sea from the horizon. I see a dike made up of all the people who are praying for me. Although still fearful, I know that all of these caring people are my bodyguards and will protect me from being totally overwhelmed by the approaching tidal wave. At the same time, I feel God's presence. Several times after the dream, during the night, I waken with overwhelming feelings of gratitude to God. This gratitude fills me with great peace and joy. This morning, I question whether or not I'm wrong to feel so special, so abundantly loved by God. But this is God's promise and assurance to each of us, divine love, before we have earned it, abundant grace. April 20th, this is the day scheduled for my mastectomy. My tumor has shrunk, and I'm going into surgery with a vivid memory of the Holland dream vision. I hold fast to the reassurance of nothing being able to separate me from God's love. A devotion book that I had taken to the hospital with me had the selection for that day, the 20th and 21st of April, based on Romans 4:21. Are being absolutely certain that God is able to do whatever God has promised. God, I thank you for having heard me, and I know you will always hear me. John 11:41-42. The next day, the surgeon stops by to say the pathology report shows only minute residual bits of cancer in my breast. My lymph nodes are completely negative. A miracle with the extent of the cancer at the onset of treatment. Now, relationship to family and friends. There were continuing shifts. Some who I counted on just weren't there for us. And others that I had not expected came through wonderfully and were a great source of strength. Many relationships were enriched and clarified, and there was a lot of sharing. My own sense of limits of time and diminished energy ended some relationships and made others flourish. One gift that I felt was powerful prayer support. Unless you felt it, I don't know how I can describe it to you, but it was like a blood transfusion. Or maybe a spiritual infusion would be a better way to put it. There were lots of surprises in relationships. One was just delightful. I had called our library because I felt I needed to keep some laughter in my life and talked to a young woman there and explained that I'm not a video or a videotape watcher, but I thought, well, that would be a nice escape from some of the realities. And she said, well, I'll try to find some for you. Well, the next day, on our way in for chemo, Jim opened up our mailbox, and it was just stuffed with videos. And this young woman named Cindy, throughout all of the months, kept supplying us with videos. And every time one would come in that she thought we would like, the library would allow it to be mailed out. So there were people like that who just sort of appeared like angels for us.
Did he ever met her?
Jim did. He thanked her personally. Mm-hmm. I wasn't going out much then. She was just a young woman, wasn't she, Jim? Who was very compassionate and responded.
Right.
Journal entry. March 29th, I receive an early birthday present, the birth of our granddaughter, Carly Grace. Our daughter Barbara had a difficult delivery, had to have a cesarean section, and when we went to the hospital, little Carly was hooked up to all kinds of wires, But I got to hold her briefly, and from the small movements of her hand and her intense look at me, my love poured out to her. Was this a parallel of God's love for us? Our efforts to be lovable to God seem about as infantile as that little newborn, helpless, dependent on the machines to keep her life going. God's love is unconditional and pours into us just as our love reaches out to a newborn in helplessness and need. That leads me to my relationship with God and radiation. I started a second series of chemotherapy along with the radiation. Journal entry of August 24th. Radiation begins today. Last week, a mummy-like styrofoam form was made of my body so that each time I come for daily radiation, I can be in exactly the same position. My chest is tattooed. Although there is no visible sign of the powerful rays that are entering my body, the sensation I have is like a marshmallow dropping into a fire and curling up on itself. I shared that with the radiologist, and he said that's exactly what is happening inside. It's a burning of the tissue. One of the quotes that was very meaningful to me then is another Henry Nouwen quote. To live a spiritual life, you must first find the courage to enter into the desert of loneliness and to change it by gentle and persistent efforts into a garden of solitude. Being alone is frightening, but coming to terms with that is healing. Now, my relationship to God. During this period of radiation, my relationship to God changed dramatically. I always had felt very close to God, but I'll read you a journal entry from November 17th. Tonight, as Jim and I begin our nightly prayers, I realize I cannot say the Lord's Prayer. The petition, "Save us from the time of trial," is too painful. I feel that I'm in the middle of a wilderness of despair. When the petition, "Give us today our daily bread," is voiced, the faces of the people of Somalia and Rwanda and Haiti come before me and overwhelm me. During the night, I awaken and remember the last time I had chemotherapy. I had gone in, but my white count was so low that they had just flushed out my veins with a saline solution. Just a salt solution. When that occurred, the backs of my hands, the crook of my arm, all the places where the chemicals had gone in before began to ache and throb, and my vein shut down on the needle that they were trying to flush the veins out with. Deep within me, my body had stored a memory of what had occurred months before and was reacting to it. Might it be possible that I also have a spiritual memory that will come to my rescue in this dark time? Later on, as I awakened, I heard these words echoing in my heart. I wait on the Lord, my soul waits. In the morning, I looked up the passage because it was just something that I'd remembered from parochial school days and found it in Psalm 130. I wait for the Lord, my soul waits, and in God's word I hope. My soul waits for the Lord more than they that watch for the morning, more than they who watch for the morning. Hope in the Lord, for with the Lord there is steadfast love, and with God is abundant redemption. These promises echo through my heart. The waiting overwhelms me. This is my cloud of unknowing. A Thomas Merton quote, "This is our desert, to look facing despair, but not to consent, to trample it down under hope in the cross, to wage war against despair unceasingly. If we cannot face despair, we will never find Christ." During this time when I wasn't able to pray, Jim prayed for me, and I felt many other people praying. And that's one of the blessings of community. The question about where is God now where is God during all kinds of suffering many of you have experienced. At that time, I wrote this story called Recycled Rainbows. Hope and healing come from the most unexpected sources. Rainbows and manure bring a sense of hope and healing to me. It started during a period of overwhelming fatigue. During my treatment for breast cancer that left me in a zombie state, sleeping 18 hours a day. My impaired immune system sharply restricted my contacts with people. An 8-week regime of radiation still lay ahead. How could I face it? Jim and I decided we needed a change of surroundings. We drove several hours north from Seattle to our daughter Linda's home in rural Washington. Linda and our 4-year-old granddaughter Claire were waiting outside for us. Claire immediately pressured me to take a short walk with them. "You can turn around any time, Grandma," she said. We headed out on a road that bordered the fields of their neighbor's dairy farm. It was a crisp, cloudless autumn day, and for the first time in many weeks, I looked up at the sky. Flocks of finches were circling, gathering for migration to a sunny, winter-free place. Sighing deeply, I took a breath of fresh country air. No, my nostrils burned with the pungent odor of cow manure. Suddenly, I heard a loud whirl. Along the field, large sprinklers with pressurized hoses began shooting streams of brown liquid up into the air. As the murky mixture arched high against the sky, I realized the hoses were spraying diluted cow dung for fertilizing the corn. Then, a surprise, as the slanting afternoon sun highlighted the streams of manure, each arc was embellished with a rainbow, a beautiful color spectrum echoing life in all of its aspects. The texture of our days is not either or, but both and, a mixture of manure and rainbows. And God is with us through all of it. With the completion of treatment was the end of one journey and the beginning of another. We all live with uncertainty, knowing that God promises healing and not cure. Part of my sharing today was that I want to continue to remember clearly how my life has changed, how it has expanded, been gifted in many ways. One visual way of expressing that is with a cornucopia, and I'll draw one again. And after I do that, if any of you want to share any of your losses or journeys, I'd be happy to have you do that. When I talked about Rembrandt, you can see that it's not part of my gifts. This is the way I visualized my life before. Very comfortable, very limits, very restricted, maybe sort of gray. And then the period of treatment. Mostly black and dark. And then we come to this part, and it's all the kinds of blessings that I felt. Like closeness. To people. taking better care of myself. Appreciation of nature. Different priorities. Things are important to me. And it could go on, but I think you get the idea. Priorities. Can any of you who have been through crises have things to add of blessings that abundant blessings that came from situations that were dark?
Well, one thing would be for me is an understanding of other people who are suffering. Because if nothing ever bad ever happens, we really get pretty blasé about things.
Okay, understanding others. Thank you. More compassion then, huh?
Yeah, that's what I mean.
More appreciation for each day.
Thank you. Anything else?
People have not maybe had this experience, see their life as going out there endlessly, but once you have this experience, you take, you're thankful for smaller segments and you don't look quite so far ahead as given. You think in shorter terms of time. Perception of time seems to change. The available time.
Perception of time would be, would yeah. That say it? That's a good one, thank you.
One might live in periods of time between doctor appointments, for example.
Well, that is real, very yep. Realistic yeah. Observation.
Those are the kind of days, maybe, and events, and but they don't go too much beyond that. Mm-hmm. You don't count on next year.
And the small things. I remember in my mom's treatment, going with then Carly, who was born after that, and you know, all discharged from the hospital, we go over to a place called AJ's across the street. I think you might have gone there for lunch one time. And it was a greasy spoon place, but I'll tell you, it was like they knew us when you walked in, and perhaps they didn't even know us, but they knew that a lot of these cancer patients would come across the street and go in there, and it was like going in for a cup of Jewish chicken soup. I mean, it was an incredible, the time was warped down to the small thing, but it was... It's like slow motion. Appreciation in slow motion.
Thank you.
And it's no longer a greasy spoon place. It's now a bar or something. It's gone. But it's in my head. I still remember it.
There's also the blessing that your life becomes for other people. You know, watching the journey and watching the geography of it, that it's not the blessings that you receive just, but that all the rest of us receive.
Blessings to others, then?
I don't know how to say it, but...
Sharing the journey?
sharing the journey and the, you know, the ways that you can, that you touch other people that you don't even know, you know, and we never know, because the story, you know, will now go out from here to other places and enrich other lives that you will have no idea of.
Thank you, Carla. And that's one of the things when you're in the middle of it. It really is hard to be open because of the emotions being so close to the surface and not having the energy.
You get a little insight how it might be to be 80 or 90 years old, because I'm sure that's how what it feels to after having the treatment, you're so tired and so weak and
don't have the energy.
So it might be like being an elderly person, and so you have the other one understanding of others. It's a special insight that you might have.
And isn't it true that I know for me that a lot of say people that have been family members or people that have been friends of mine that have been the aged, very old, have a sense of less urgency. They're more they can discriminate better. Their vision is clear, maybe not physically clear, but and I think I certainly saw that with my mom, that things that were a big thing for me that I was all in a turmoil about was, it wasn't that she wasn't compassionate to me, but it was very much in its place. And I think, like you say, maybe just being at the other end of life.
Yeah, it gives you a glimpse of it.
But then you get a reprieve, you get to go back.
Yeah.
And do it again.
That's not a choice of the elder.
Right.
Yeah, that's one reason I started with death, because I think we often push that off so far, and in any kind of life crisis, not just this kind of crisis, you're forced to face that, your mortality, and to reprioritize your life. Any other either blessings that
sharing of the journey was a great revelation to me, that so many people were willing to pray and stand by and to do all the things that were needed, and there was nothing I could give back. But it was so wonderful to be carried along in that, that love and compassion and caring and standing by that takes a lot.
I think that's really significant. If you are a giver, you're used to giving, and you all of a sudden, you said you can't, you just can't.
There's nothing, you don't have anything.
And you're like a piece of wood in a river, you're just being carried along.
So I was like a sponge.
A sponge.
I just kind of took it all in, and I felt this great peace, God's great peace that carried me along, and I realized that how shocking that you can say the words death and talk about death, but when it's staring you in the face and you have to wrestle with it and you have to face your fear and your faith, and when you're weak, your faith seems like it's non-existent. So I realized that I had hid from death, and you know that we run from it and pretend it's not going to happen. And it's still very, I still have a lot of emotion just sitting here. I just feel filled up with tears that I denied are there. And, but it was so wonderful to be carried.
You covered a lot, like receiving.
I don't know which one.
No, I think they're very important, Donna. When you can't give, to be able to receive. Facing death, that's a gift. It doesn't sound like it, but it really is. You had a lot more in there too. And yours was a brain tumor, is that right, Dan?
No, Hodgkin, or non-Hodgkin's lymphoma.
Thank you. Anything else or any other sharing? It doesn't have to be of your journeys. Well, I appreciate you all coming and putting off your supper until a later hour. Thank you very much.
Thank you.